Good evening, James McKenna here with my Science Hour, May 31st, 2018. Going to start off tonight right away with a comet story, this in the news. They are saying, and this is in an article for space.com, was written, it says, more comet samples needed to understand solar system's history, scientists say. I always love when they say scientists say, as if just saying scientist was meaningful. So this was in space.com, May 29th, just 2 days ago. But anyway, listen to what it says here. It says, more samples of comets are urgently needed to better understand the early history of the solar system, say researchers analyzing comet dust brought back to Earth from NASA's Stardust mission in 2006. And so those samples, they say, contain clues about the earliest history of the solar system. And so they claim there were 150 scientific publications based on that mission, and it makes an important point about the limits of our knowledge of the early proto-solar disk of gas and dust from which the solar system formed. That's what they say here. And so, anyway, the NASA missions, when they plan them, they already have the results. So they assume by the science they gather. Now, just let me explain what happened here. They visited a comet called Wild 2, is the way it's pronounced in German. But they went through the tail with kind of a gel-like material on a big, kind of like a tennis racket, and picked up material from the tail of a comet. Well, when they came back, there was nucleotides of DNA that they discovered. There was other dust, other particles, but how do you, from that, determine the age of the solar system unless you assume that that material was created at the formation of the solar system and then decide, using the same materials, that the solar system is 4.5 billion years old? So it's a circular reasoning. And the idea of studying space, one would think, is that you go out and you examine materials and then you go, well, gee, what does this tell us? What are the limitations of this material that we've gathered? What can we analyze from it? What can we determine? And what can we not determine from it? One of the things they absolutely cannot determine from it is the age of the solar system. I mean, we're talking about Pluto and all of the other planets, Jupiter. We're talking about Earth. What does the smidgen of particles that they picked up moving through this comet tail have to do with the formation of Earth or the sun? Hold it, folks, here. You know, these grandiose, absolutely grandiose projections, extrapolations really have no meaning. Okay, so enough of that. I just saw that pop up before the show here, so I thought I'd rant on that a little bit. By the way, I'll be talking about propulsion systems tonight. I ended the show last week with a brief discussion of propulsion systems, and by the way, I'll be going into a long, very detailed, probably take a couple shows, dissertation on propulsion systems in my paid cast. Something that, there's a reason for that. It's very important for you, the public, to understand propulsion systems because propulsion systems, say jet engines or rockets that you see, space shuttle, the Saturn V moon rocket, or any of those, you have to understand where they sit in the overall expansion into outer space. What do they do for us? I mean, What are their limitations? Where can they go? Where can they not go? And that's, so anyway, I'll be talking at the end of this show, main science topic tonight, about propulsion systems. So anyway, a little bit of commentary here on Latin American politics. And now talking about Latin, I would include Italy as a Latin country. Well, Italy is where Latin, the language, began. That's the native language of Italy. So when you're talking about Latin American countries, Italy certainly would be thrown in the mix and right at the very top of the list, in fact. But right now there's a defugality, a political defugality going on in Italy. And they're looking at breaking away from the European Union, doing a Brexit. What would they call it? Itexit. Something, I don't know. And anyway, they are, let's say, moving towards that goal of getting away from the European Union. And so what does the European Union come in with? The international bank sets up an intermediate government. Now, this just tells you what the European Union is all about. It's the banker world solidifying all of Europe under one set of rules. And I know that the countries, like I heard the people talking about Brexit in England, and they said, you know, you have all of these things being decided from the European Union, and they don't have anything to say about it. It's just like, okay, this is the way it's going to be right now. And so right now Italy is moving into that. And just a day or two ago, a guy named Lula, now he was the president of Brazil, duly elected. I mean, if you want to talk about democratic elections, that guy was elected by popular vote, went into office, and was there a short while when he was ousted with a coup that was set up, as we understand now, from James Comey, our good friend in the FBI. And there's a whole laundry list of FBI agents who were instrumental in ousting the duly elected president of Brazil, and then who was thrown in prison by an edict from a judge that they had in place there. And so anyway, just the other day, Lula got out of jail because of a large international push that stated basically that he was a political prisoner. He was accused of corruption, and all of that was, he was exonerated from that, but they kept him in prison. So basically, yeah, he was a political prisoner with the CIA coming in and with basically their installed puppets in Brazil during the Summer Olympics last summer. And they went in and put up some trumped up charges to haul the guy out, put him in prison, and he just got out. And so anyway, this is very strange, but there, I could go on and on about Latin American politics, but the one thing that overshadows all of it is the CIA, which is the police force of the World Bank. And by the way, also, this came out of a CIA magazine called Bloomberg's. There's a guy that is public, he's visible, basically a CIA shill on Bloomberg. His name is James Rickards, and he is their strategic intelligence editor, who predicted that there would be a collapse this coming September 18th of the world economy. And so I can tell you that this is baloney. If you've read this, and then see, the problem with an article like this is it first is published in Bloomberg, and then it gets dissected, injected, infested, regurgitated, reassembled, and distributed and retransmitted in many forms. So you'll probably be hearing about that for the next 6 months, however long to September 18th. But you see the timing also. The timing is when the Justice Department is supposed to release the Clinton emails. And so anyway, it's odd that those two dates coincide. So it's a way of getting people's minds collectively, singularly, off of the date of September 18th and put it onto something else which has no merit at all. Because I guarantee you, this yo-yo doesn't have any more ability to predict the future of the economy of the world than I do. And I don't have any ability to predict the future of the world economy. So, I mean, you could be hard-pressed to predict what it's going to do tomorrow, let alone 6 months from now. Anyway, a little bit, I talked last week about the Hawaiian volcano and fracking. Now, this is a rather complex issue, and there is a lot of people talking about the idea that the volcano eruption, the recent one in Kilauea volcano in Hawaii, the Big Island of Hawaii, was in fact caused by fracking from this geothermal power station. Let's take a look at a few things here. It's probably not a good idea to pump water down into this volcano. It's a terrible idea, and that should have never been allowed in the first place. But is there direct scientific proof that this eruption of the world's most active volcano was in fact caused by this fracking? Was there something they did differently, because this installation has been here for 20 years. And so is this in fact the cause of the volcano? And so in a scientific sense, I haven't seen any direct proof of this. Now, what do I mean by that? First of all, I would be the first one to say that putting water down into a live volcano is a terrible idea. Fracking is a terrible idea. Geothermal energy is a pretty bad idea. Drilling into, like, the BP oil spill down in the Gulf of Mexico being, you know, what, 5-6 kilometers deep? Or they're even talking now about drilling 18 miles down into the earth. The problem is if you hit fluid, which the oil is, or water or some other substance down there, liquid substance, then all of a sudden you have a real problem, because the pressures down there are so great it's like popping a balloon and you can't cap it. There's no way to put a cap on this thing to stop the flow. So anyway, but fracking is not a good idea. So I'd be the very, first one to say that. However, looking strictly in a scientific sense, was there something they did recently was different than what they've been doing for the past 20 years that all of a sudden kicked off this volcano? And that's where the scientific evidence comes in. Is there, and I would question people who say this now, I also would be one of the first ones to say that there is a high probability that the fracking that is pumping water down into the ground from this geothermal station is potentially very damaging. It very likely could have been the cause of the recent volcanic eruption, but that is not 100% concrete scientific one-to-one correlation between the geothermal installation and the volcanic eruption. So, but if you look at other locations, Nevada, California, where they do have track records, now those are not volcanic regions, and they do have a good track record of the fracking and the geothermal installations there creating earthquakes. And that's what the volcanic, the situation was in Hawaii, is first there were earthquakes, and then the volcano started to move, the magma started moving around and began to erupt. And so there, you could make a good case for the fact that you should not be putting a geoplant there, a geothermal plant, but it's probably not going to make a lot of difference because from what I understand, it's as we speak, it's being overrun by lava, and it probably there won't be anything left of it because lava pretty much destroys everything. But this also brings up the point, and here's the main takeaway from this, is that finally, I'm just amazed that geologists are starting to figure out that steam is the cause of volcanic explosive activity. Now, this is a great revelation because the standard teaching for geologists regarding the explosive nature of volcanoes was that the gases that came up from the belching up from the center of the earth were the source of energy for blowing, say, for the example, the top of Mount St. Helens 60 miles up into the air. Totally ludicrous. If those gases were going to explode, why weren't they exploding before? You know, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it just makes absolutely no sense. What does make sense is that there are water tables down in the earth, and when the volcano starts rumbling, the water moves around, it starts dropping down, and then when the first bit of water hits the magma, it's going to create an explosion. It's going to turn into a super steam. It's going to create a big opening. It's like going to, you can see the volcano, in fact, the whole volcano moving up by a meter or two. That's a lot of pressure building up, and then it collapses down. And in the interim, the water in that gap is starting to move down. More and more water goes down to hit the magma until all of a sudden there's a breach and a big lake-sized volume of water pours down onto the magma and kawamo, off goes the top of the mountain. Steam engine, that's what a volcano is. So lo and behold, they finally started figuring this out in Hawaii. And the geologists were talking about groundwater affecting the volcanic activity, the explosive volcanic activity. Because remember that Hawaii is a shield volcano. It's the kind where the lava oozes out and rolls down the hillside. And sure, there's some popping and sputtering and things like that. But it's not blowing something 60 miles up in the air, the top of a mountain, Krakatoa style, or Tambora style, whatever. So anyway, now let's go up to Yellowstone National Park. And something that I've been saying for years is that the volcanic explosive activity is caused by steam, and that we have to drain the lake at Yellowstone. So anyway, I've gotten some feedback this week from listeners. There's some more activity going on in the background trying to get awareness and in the world, because we have to bypass government geologists because they're idiots. Most of them sit there, and like most government scientists, which is 99.9% of all scientists, somehow their butter gets breaded, their bread gets buttered, whatever, by government funding, and so they don't really have to produce, they don't have to think, they certainly don't want to challenge, and they certainly don't want to upset the apple cart. So that's why there's never any progress, and never could be any progress in government-supported science. So end run around these people and get to the point where we can drain this lake. Now, I pointed out on my webpage, I have a subpage that's dedicated to this. And the way you find that is you scroll down on my webpage, which I'm sorry, it's a mess, but people who persevere
And I only want people who persevere. I only want people who are going to spend some time there. This is not a, you know, people go to a web page and it's like, you know, they want to click on something and have a tweet length explanation for how the solar system works. Well, sorry, buddy, ain't going to happen. If you come to my page, you better get a big pot of coffee or your favorite beverage, because either you're going to spend a lot of time there and you're going to learn something. If you're there just for a short soundbite, you know, don't bother. Go to somebody else. Go see some goofy YouTube video with stupid science, and then, you know, don't bother me. But if you're interested in spending serious time, then come to my website. But I have a subpage. You go down, scroll down a little bit. There's the page breaks into three columns. The middle column at the very top has my radio show archives. And below that, there's a peer review, criticism of peer review. There's my bio. And right there also is the link to historically important subpages. And when you go to that subpage, near the very top is the link that talks about Yellowstone. And I suggest everybody go look at that. Very well written. And it explains, for example, that the three major volcanic eruptions, the big ones that destroyed like half the of what we call the United States, the three big ones occurred when there was a lake at the caldera above that hot spot that we now call Yellowstone. So we got to get the lake out of there. It's very easy to do. I explain how to do it. There's a channel in the southeast corner of the lake. There's also a possibility on the northern side, but you don't want to drain it off the northern side because that's where the hot spot is. You want it to drain south away from the hot spot, and there's a channel that's already built there. Just have to etch it out a little bit, drain the lake, and then we're not going to have the earth-damaging Yellowstone eruption. Okay, very good. So go check that out. Just a commentary on the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, this was in the news this week and very interesting. They're saying that the Nobel Committee, the Peace Prize Committee, there are different committees for the Nobel Prizes, and the Peace Prize Committee is very remiss that they gave Obama a Nobel Peace Prize. And it's really pretty hokey because apparently the scuttle is on this, that they gave it to Obama thinking that he would become a Nobel Prize worthy person. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why would you give a prize in physics, a Nobel Prize in physics to someone because you thought maybe they were going to discover something? Obama was he killed more people with drones and bombs and more wars than even the Bushes. I mean, it was just absolutely ridiculous, the stuff he did, creating ISIS and terrorism. Good grief, you know. Anyway, so that was a big mistake. And so anyway, that, by the way, that was 2 months into his presidency. And also, they gave a Nobel Peace Prize to the president of Colombia because they had a civil war there. And the whole peace process that occurred there was started by Fidel Castro and Hugo Chavez. Castro, of course, from Cuba, Chavez from Venezuela. And this is many years ago when they proposed that Colombia get its act together and stop this civil war that had been going on for 50 years. And so ultimately, when the peace accord was signed, it was Santos who was president. But when they gave that, they should have also given it to Fidel Castro and Hugo Chavez. They are the ones who initiated the whole process. The process, the negotiations are held in Cuba. So why did and there was some work that went on. Many people in Colombia also were instrumental, including Santos, the president. But the Nobel Peace Prize Committee probably could not give the prize to Fidel and Chavez because they're not in the banker world. They are considered to be, remember George Bush Jr., axes of evil, Venezuela, Iran, and Russia? The axis of evil. Well, the reason they were the axis of evil was because they didn't sell their oil under the petrodollar, which, by the way, is gone today. I mean, that's a thing of the past. So anyway, but the Nobel Physics Prize has been highly politicized. And so that's kind of what I'm trying to get at here. They've broken their own rules. They gave a Nobel Prize to a government employee in NASA and a team of people. And so that breaks three of the rules. It's not supposed to be government funded. It's supposed to be an individual making groundbreaking discoveries. And the Nobel Prize that was given to the NASA people was for the Big Bang, the Kobe satellite for allegedly discovering the microwave background radiation, which unfortunately drove another nail in the coffin of rational cosmology. The physics prize the Nobel Physics Prize has been politicized. That's all I can tell you. And unfortunately, I don't know what it would take for them to get back on track. But I can tell you the recommendations and the judging, etc., are at the very highest levels totally politicized. So unfortunately, this tends to engrave the cosmology model of the Big Bang, etc., and it's really bad for science because it's all a piece of garbage, has no validity at all. Just a quick note: Hurricane or Tropical Storm Alberto slamming into the southern coast of the United States before the hurricane season, which begins in just a couple days here, June 1st to November. And so it is the first named storm actually having landfall. And I'm sorry, I did not have time to really examine this storm to see if there was any funny business regarding the storm, other than I've been busy with other things, so. By the way, I've mentioned this before, do not get your science on YouTube. People send me things and I look at it and I go, oh my goodness, this is just garbage. So if you want to fix your bicycle or your lawnmower, or if you want to bake a cake, there might be some good information on YouTube, but do not get your science from YouTube. Just to note, this past week, there were two shootings in the United States, both of them foiled. One of them in Oklahoma, in a restaurant, some guy came in shooting. Two people from the restaurant ran out, two men grabbed their guns out of their trucks and shot the guy. And so, and this is going to lead up to a little bit of a commentary just about the whole issue of gun control, etc. And, the one of the sayings is the only way to stop a bad person with a gun, who, by the way, probably got it totally illegally and gun control laws would not prevent them from having a gun. But the two guys that shot him had guns that were legal, and the only way to stop that tragedy was to shoot this guy with the gun. And they did it, and basically proving that the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is to have a good guy with a gun. But there was another one in Indiana, in a school. A kid came in shooting wounded three kids, and the teacher just went at him and got hit, got wounded, but wrestled the kid, got the gun away, etc. So, and I found it interesting in watching some videos this week that even Nancy Pelosi is talking about gun training. And now this is getting to something that I feel is very important. You should not just be selling guns to people. People should have gun training. I've had people, and you know, I travel a lot. I go to foreign countries, and people say, "Hey, can you get me a gun?" And it's like, "No, I can't." And they said, "Well, we need some kind of protection here. It's dangerous where we are." And I said, "Yeah, but a person with a gun who doesn't know what they're doing is far more dangerous than a person without a gun. And so training is essential. So I recommend, and especially women are, you know, they more vulnerable in our society. Let's just put it that way. And so I believe in people choosing the method that they believe is best for them to defend themselves. Now, I'll tell you something too. Having a gun around for self-defense tends to make people a bit more nervous. If that's your intention in getting a gun, knowing that that's there, you know, when something happens, going for the gun is a method of causing a lot of stress in your life. So before you choose a gun as a method of self-defense, make sure, number one, that you're prepared to actually live with that responsibility, and number two, get training. Get serious training. And there's training centers all over the country, but get training. And I believe, too, that training should be mandatory, because myself and not all the kids when I was little got training for guns, etc. But I did, and I learned how to handle guns. I learned how to be familiar with them. I learned what to do, what not to do. And it was very serious training, and we were young kids. And our parents took it very seriously, and I took it very seriously, and all my friends took it very seriously. So to have simply guns around that, you know how to take off the safety and pull the trigger, that is not gun training. You have to be disciplined. You have to, you know, and I think that would be a way to allow people who say, "Well, I'm a safe person." Well, yeah, that's great, you know, but go through gun training. And that would be a way to allow people to have their guns, but also to make sure that they know how to store them, that they're not just there in a gun case loaded and ready to go. And I'll be honest with you, I've been in houses where I visited people or whatever, and they'll have a gun rack in the living room, one in the bedroom, one in the guest bedroom, with military-grade weapons loaded. And there's kids in the house, but all the kids are very much aware of that. They're very much trained. And there's not something to worry about, because these people have training, and there's an understanding amongst people that have training. But if you look at all of the cases where that would be a good study to look at the number of shootings, and then look at the people that did the shooting. Did they have training? Did they go to gun training as kids? Did they have gun training as adults? Did their parents, in the cases where kids took their parents' guns, did the parents have gun training? Were they taught? Did they pass a course on gun safety? You know, when you have your guns at home, they should be locked up. The shells are not near the gun. There's a lock on the trigger. you know, or whatever. It's in a gun case that's locked. You don't just get there and open it up, or friends come over. That's the other thing. You know, people come over, their friends come over. Are those friends trained? You know, you just don't let this stuff wide open to the public. So my opinion is that, take, for example, in Switzerland, kids are taught to use guns at a young age, and literally every house in the country has military-grade weapons. It's a nationwide, basically, militia. And so any adult can, in a minute's notice, become a member of their military to defend the country. And they have the lowest crime rate probably in the world. Well, now they're having some problems because of illegal immigration, or immigration issues, I should say. But in the United States, and I'll tell you something too, I travel a lot. There are countries that do not have a history of having guns. They don't know. It would be a bad idea to allow people in these countries to have guns, because it would just be a disaster. But in the United States, there is a history of people having guns and having training. But I think this would be a good issue for the schools, because I've heard recently that kids are asking, where can I get gun training? And in a lot of cases, there's no place to do this. Just like driving an automobile. It used to be that you would get a driver's license, you'd go out and start driving a car. And then they realized, that's just not a very good idea, because people are driving around, you know, they know where the foot pedal is. They might not know where the brake is, but they sure know where the gas pedal is. And they start driving around and, you know, they don't have any training. And so they do stupid things, kill themselves, other people, hurt themselves, other people. And so they realize that, gee, we need student training. So now in the high school, you have student training for driving an automobile. There, when I was on certain shows recently and the topic of gun control came up, I said that, you know, looking at the number of people killed from school shootings, there's huge numbers of students that are killed every year driving automobiles that are in high school. Probably one per high school are the numbers, and 250,000 are injured in car accidents that are serious enough to where they're hospitalized. That's 250,000 kids. Good grief. And that's with driver's training. You know, so the issue is that cars are more dangerous, if you look at pure statistics and numbers, far more dangerous than guns are. But then again, you look at the number of hours that kids spend in cars from the time they're 16, and of course there's a lot more time spent in automobiles than walking around with guns. But the point comes back to training, mandatory gun training. Now, I'm just throwing it out there. Maybe there's some flaws with this thinking, but I think it's a bad idea to sell somebody a gun without making sure they are properly trained. And so, you know, you say about background checks, mental health checks. How about training? Do they know how to use this? Do they know how to keep the gun safe? Do they know how to lock it up? Do they know how to, you know, all of the aspects of owning a gun? These are dangerous things. Very dangerous. And it's, you know, you can't compare it to a knife, because with a knife, you have to be standing next to the person to injure them. A gun, you can be 50 yards away and kill somebody. So it's different. It's different than an automobile, because in an automobile, you're in there, you're grabbing onto the wheel, and you're managing that automobile. But a gun is, you know, it's a dangerous thing, let's face it. To hand them out without training, hello, boys and girls, I don't think it's a good idea. So my idea is that there should be training available for students in a high school, and maybe it wouldn't take place in the high school. The classroom part of it is could take place in a high school, but also it would get kids familiar with this idea of what a gun is for. It's the different types of guns. And, you know, one of the big issues they talk about are assault rifles. Let me tell you something. I don't think there's any kind of gun that's more dangerous than any other kind of gun. To say that an assault rifle is somehow more dangerous is ludicrous. It doesn't make any sense at all. That one type of gun, this type of gun that's shaped this way is more dangerous than this gun over here. No, it's the person that's holding it, because the gun is an inanimate object. It's not going to do anything without it being in a person's hand. But to hand these out without training, especially to kids, you know, I think you're asking for trouble. So that's my solution. Excuse me for pounding on the bandwagon here, but training. Okay, you want to use a gun? You got to go to training. Pure and simple. And there's a lot of training. There's a lot of serious people. You have the, and that's something I think the National Rifle Association could do well at, besides just, and I know they do training. That's one of their biggest efforts, is in training. But I don't think they say that enough. I think when they get criticized, what they should come back and say is, we want everybody to get training that is going to have a gun in their hands, and we're here to do that. I think the NRA, but I don't hear them saying that. And I just heard that Oliver North was going to be the new president of the NRA. Well, maybe he should take up the stance that we do training in the NRA. If people are going to have a gun, they should be trained. Okay, I'm sorry I kind of went off on a tangent there, but I think that's very important, because we have to, in this country where people are armed, people have the constitutional right to bear arms, and it's there's a little bit of a misnomer there also, that the Constitution does not give you the right. You had the right before the Constitution was ever written to defend yourself. The Constitution says that the right shall not be infringed upon. So the Constitution did not give you the right. You already had the right. It's just saying that it will not be infringed upon. That's what it says. And so the issue is that, in this modern world, there's a lot more people. And this is not about hunting. This is about defending yourself, defending your country against foes, foreign and domestic. So at any rate, but gun training is very important, because if you want to really know how to use a gun, then you should be trained for that type of gun. Whether it's a pistol is different than a shotgun, is different than a small caliber rimfire rifle, and that's different than a high powered rifle, that's different from say an AR-15 or something. So having training on each one, if you're going to use a certain type of gun, you should have training on that, just like if you're going to drive a car or a semi truck down the road, you need training. Very simple. If you're going to use a computer, you need training. Of course, you can pick it up and use it by yourself, but you're not really going to have good control of that computer if you don't have training. So we in the schools, we have training for computers, we have training for driving automobiles, training for firearms. And the classroom part of it could be at the school, and then the hands-on part of it would be at a gun range or an indoor gun range or whatever under, you know, authorized conditions, etc. And it would be a great service to this country if the young people were trained in the use of firearms, because they're around. They're not going to go away. The efforts to try and point at school shootings to try and get guns out of people's hands is not going to work. And, people can say gun control all they want, but there's just too many guns out there. So we need training. We need people to be trained. And if you're not trained and you see people who are not trained, you say, okay, you want to use this, son, daughter, cousin, whatever, grandpa, grandma, you need training. You need training to use these things that are very dangerous in the wrong hands. You need training. Sorry. Okay. Let's just look at the training that kids get without real training. They're taught in video games that they can shoot people dozens of times or they can get shot, and then they live through this just fine. I was on John Moore's show yesterday, and he told a story, a terrible story. A friend of his son, the friend's son, was out walking in the countryside with some friends, and one of them found a gun and picked it up and pointed it at the other one and pulled the trigger and shot him, killed him. You know, this would not happen if they had gun safety. You know, this is a perfect example of someone that had no gun awareness. And like John said, if your kids go out in the world, chances are they're going to encounter people with guns someday. And maybe go to the house of friends where they have guns, etc. You have to know what to do and what not to do and how to recognize dangerous situations. You have to understand. You have to know about these things, just like driving a car down the road. I tell young people, I hear young people go, well, it wasn't my fault. He hit me. You know, I was, you know, whatever. And I always say that, no, 99% of the time it's your fault because you were not aware that somebody's going to do something stupid. Do you understand that? That driving defensively, I have worked for major corporations, and they all, listen to this, they all have driver safety programs where they teach defensive driving because the company fleet is out there. They pay a lot of money for insurance, and if people are injured on the job, it's very costly. So they actually have courses to teach people defensive driving. And what does that teach you? That teaches you don't tailgate that guy in front of you. Don't zip in and out of traffic. Leave yourself enough room so you can stop or avert an accident. Always assume that the other guy is going to do something stupid, and 99 times out of 100, you will be able to avert an accident because you are thinking ahead for the other person that's about to do something stupid. So, and that is not what we're doing with guns. The people in schools have the doors wide open. Somebody can walk in any door. Come on, this is ridiculous. I mean, it's not only shooting. I mean, anybody could walk in off the street. And, it's absolutely absurd. So, I saw a CNN show. I really don't like CNN, but it was Chris Matthews. I can't remember the guy's name. Really a sharp guy. But he said that he was talking to Nancy Pelosi, and he said, look, when they walk into CNN headquarters or she walks into her government office, those places are protected. So why not have the same protection for kids? Or at least not let the door open so any Tom, Dick, or Harry can just walk in with a gun. So that's one thing. But I highly recommend for people to get gun training. And like John Moore said, even little kids get training to understand that that gun is not a toy. That's the other problem. We have so many toy guns that come out. I see kids running around with, they look like, military weapons, and these are toys, or a pistol, and they look real from a distance. You know, if a policeman comes on a scene and there's some kid with a handgun, those things look real from a distance. How do you know that it's not a squirt gun, when you're seeing that gun moving around, you don't know. I mean, it's just, so that's another problem, is the play guns that are on the scene, or paintballs. You know, you learn in paintball that you can shoot each other. But anyway, this whole issue of guns has to be brought up to a level of education, not one of fear. If you live by fear, you're going to make bad decisions, etc. If you live by good education, etc., like in Switzerland, where they start the kids off at a very young age, and by the time they're young adults, they're very well trained in military weapons and the use of them. And they don't really seem to have a problem there. They don't have a problem with school shootings, etc., because they're trained, they're disciplined. And young people can be trained, I guarantee you. But if you just let kids off willy-nilly, and a lot of parents think the education takes place in the schools. So they're not educating their kids today. They think, oh, the school takes care of all that. They just provide them food and a TV and a video game, and they're good to go. So, I believe that the school systems should take an active role and develop programs, and it doesn't have to be mandatory. If people don't want to have anything to do with it, okay, fine. But there's a lot of kids who would like to have gun education and learn about them and understand them and learn how to use them properly, because there's nobody more dangerous than a person without proper training. And this is just in normal everyday life. I'm not talking about school shootings. Just in normal everyday life, there's a lot of accidents that happen because people are not properly trained. And by the way, this week there were two shootings that were averted because of people who squelched the situation. I already talked about that. Anyway, okay, that's a bit of a long-winded dissertation, but I think very necessary. I was going to talk about propulsion systems again this week, but I'm running a little short on time. So here's what I'm going to do. This just came in. It's regarding the Navajo Nation down in Arizona. This is a very current topic. They have a power plant. They actually have two power plants there. They're coal powered. I believe one's a 300 megawatt. The other one is 200 megawatts. And for those of you who are not familiar with those terms, that's the amount of power that's produced by the coal-operated power plant. So this 500 megawatts, if we look at an average household, so you're in a house, you're like the average household across the country, you use about 1.3 kilowatts, that's 1.3 thousand watts of electricity at all times. And that's, in other words, that's like having 13 100-watt light bulbs running 24/7, 365 days a year. So imagine that instead of your refrigerator, your TV, your computer, your laundry, your hot water heater, or anything electric in your house, on average, your air conditioner, on average, your furnace that runs off electricity, on average, that's the equivalent of 100-watt light bulbs running 24/7. Okay, so they're going to shut down these power plants, but they're putting in solar panels, and they sell this. I mean, I want to talk about is the ridiculousness of putting in solar panels and somehow convincing people that it's green. First of all, solar panels are not green. There's a horrendous amount of environmental damage in making those solar panels. Each solar panel puts out about, in this case, 225 watts. Probably 240 watts is standard size. Okay, So they're putting in 120,000 solar panels, each one putting out 240 watts. So what you come up with is, if you use that 1.3 kilowatt average electricity usage per household, you come up with 18,000 houses that solar array can power. That's when the sun's shining. When the sun's not shining, then those solar panels do not provide enough electricity for those 18,000 houses. But the coal-fired power plant was sufficient, the 500 megawatts, was sufficient to run about 350 million houses. So to somehow imagine that this solar array is somehow going to replace that coal-fired plant is pure myth. And okay, so now what do you do the other days, hours of the day in which the sun is not shining? So that includes, now this does not include cloudy days. This is just on assuming a perfectly sunny day. By the industry standards, they say that you get what it's called 4 solar hours of energy per day. So what do you do the other 20 hours of the day? You would have to have solar panels that then put energy into batteries. That's an inefficient process, and then recapturing that energy from batteries, very inefficient process. So it turns out that imagining that those batteries were 100% efficient, which they're not, it would take 444 solar arrays, 120,000 each, 444 of these to provide the same amount of energy as the power plant, the coal-fired power plant. And you can tell they had trouble putting in one of these. They're going to put in another one, and they're touting this as some kind of major solution to replace the coal plant. But this is absurd. And all I'm going to tell you is that people put these numbers in the newspaper, and the reality is those solar panels do not run at 100%. They have a limited lifetime. In 20 years, they're going to have to replace them. So to imagine that somehow somebody is selling these Indians a bill of goods, that's what I'm telling you. And so those are the simple numbers. I could go into a lot of detail. But the three-blade wind generators and solar panels will not replace central power companies, and that's what they're trying to bill this as. So I'm out of time here. Remember, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. Go to my paid cast, $3.95 a month extra. And also I have some very good book deals. If you join the paid cast, you can get my e-libraries for half price, a very good deal. Then plus $3.95 a month for the paid cast. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.